Hey, hey, it's me, Erin Carrera, the Modern Oracle, and I was just jamming to my music. I just love it. Makes me very happy. Hello, and welcome to the Modern Oracle on 1-2 Radio with me, your host, Erin Carrera. Today is Tuesday, June 9th, 8 a.m. Pacific time. And today we're going to be talking about love, because the second Tuesday of every month is all about love, baby, all about love. I am definitely calling myself an expert in love. Today we're going to be talking specifically about intuition, fear, and fantasy in love. If you don't know me, if you've never worked with me before, if you've never seen any of my video content, my TikTok or Instagram content, or I mean, maybe you and I go way back and you've even seen my one woman show from 16 years ago now called The One. I developed a series of tools and expertise around love and love and relationships as one of my primary focuses in this life. And I was sort of primed for it because all my life, all I ever wanted was to fall in love and be in love. And that became an obsession with exactly that, falling in love. We call it limerence. Is the addiction to the feeling of falling in love. Now, I didn't know that at the time. At the time, I thought I was just getting in and out of a series of insane relationships, because the other side of, for me, for this was, I was getting in and out of relationships my entire life that were either with someone who I was sure was the one, even though, I mean, looking back, I totally knew this person was not suitable for me whatsoever, or the opposite side, because as a young woman, I was quite people pleaser. There were two Erins. There was wild Xena warrior princess Erin, and then there was people pleaser pushover Erin. And pushover Erin was often getting talked into relationships, also not suitable for me. And around 2010, I had started telling people just different stories about my love life that I thought were totally tragic and awful. And people would laugh. I mean, not meanly, not cruelly. They just couldn't help themselves. And I realized, oh, this probably will tell you another little bit about my personality. Oh, there is comedy gold in my love life. So I decided after my label career ended, because I was here as a singer-songwriter on a label, after that career, after the label went away, and I was totally depressed, I thought, you know what? I'm going to write a one-woman show about my love life. But at the same time, I'd already been doing tarot readings, astrology. I'd been working as a professional astrologer for quite some time. I was also getting my life coaching certification at that time. I was doing training for that. And so I was writing a one-woman show about my personal love life, intended to be comedic. And I was doing life coaching training. And what I ended up doing is deconstructing my life, my love life, specifically my love life. And I realized, first of all, the common denominator in every story was yours truly. And I began to recognize patterns in myself, patterns of desire, longing, choosing an incorrect or inappropriate partner for myself, looking for all the ways that it was certainly fate, and then getting embroiled in something wrong for me, and then having to go through all the drama of getting out of the relationship, and the drama of getting into a new relationship, and sometimes they intermingled, and y'all, I was wild. Anyway, after I did the one-woman show, and I toured it in a few different places, a few different cities around the country, the United States, and I had my life coaching certification, I wanted to know more, so I began specifically studying love and love relationships, because I realized once I knew better, I could never go back for myself. And as I developed all kinds of skills and tools to better understand myself and therefore better my relationships, which means sometimes not even getting into certain relationships in the first place, I began to develop tools for other people. And I began to specifically use my intuition as well as my coaching training to help other people with relationships. And then I started working very shortly after that for Want to Listen. And here we are. So today, I want to talk about the idea of fate and love, because it's not that I don't believe in that. I do. When I tell you the story of my husband, I mean, sometimes I remind myself of the story of the crazy interweavings and connections between me and my husband to remind myself of what it was like when we fell in love, because I'm totally annoyed with him in real life. And I need to remember why we fell in love, to remember why we stay together. What is our why for being together? Of course, my why now, 14 years into our relationship, is our shared vision for life together. And life with somebody, with a partner, the longer you grow together, if you are indeed growing together, there are ways that it gets actually better and better. Is it like the beginning? No. It's better in so many other ways, though. We'll talk about that at some point. But today, we're talking about fear and intuition and desire and love, and where those, the Venn diagram of where all of those meet, how that can create confusion for people and lead us to make choices that maybe aren't in our best interest, right? So when was the last time, when it comes to something about love, and that could be meeting a person, that could be a feeling you have about a current partner or a previous partner, when was the last time that you told yourself, I just know, right? Somebody you met, a feeling you couldn't shake, a connection that feels destined. Oh, those connections are hard, right? Sometimes I'll get calls from people and want to listen, and it'll be like, well, I met somebody and I know they're the one. And if you dig a little deeper, you find out, well, they didn't really meet this person. They saw this person at the gym and they know that person is the one, but they don't know anything about that person. That person might be gay and they're straight. That person might be married with three children and happily so, or right. But a conviction comes over this person that that person is the one. Now, I'm not saying that this person that they saw across the gym or they see every Wednesday in Pilates or whatever isn't the one. I'm just saying often our desire, our longing can create a strong feeling that our brain then goes to translate into a story around intuition, a story around fate. That's what we're going to be talking about a little bit. Because there are times also where you get a feeling, and you're right. I mean, what's so funny about all this is, even though I know I'm being like little Miss Schoolmarm Auntie Erin here, I had a feeling about my husband. But I had feelings about other people that didn't work out. So it was like, by the time I met my husband, I had enough wisdom and tools in place to say, okay, well, I have a feeling about him. But I'm just going to enjoy the ride, watch and see. I mean, so far, 14 years in, I think it's going pretty good, but we'll see. So this is what we're going to be talking today about today. How do you know the difference between fear and intuition, longing and intuition, desire, intuition, right? How do we know? And what do we do when we get there? What do we do if it is just longing? Is that wrong? It is not wrong. Well, what do we do if it is just desire to be chosen? Well, then you can get to know this person or not, right? There's so many things we can do. Okay, now, I do believe in intuition, obviously. I mean, I'm here with you now on 1-2 Radio with 1-2 Listen. I believe deeply in intuition. I also know that we humans are so imaginative and creative and powerful, and our minds are powerful, and we can begin to convince ourselves of things that may not be so. And we only need to look at history for this, right? So we know that we could talk about the witch burning times, which, by the way, people are talking about again as if they were real, meaning as if the witches who were burned at the stake as a witch were actually really in consort with the devil instead of poor. Usually they were poor or elderly, or they owned property somebody else wanted and that other person accused them of witchcraft. We have historical evidence of all of this. But people got talked into believing, like, for example, one of my ancestors was tried as a witch because somebody saw her having sex with Satan on a broomstick. oh, I think I have to say schmecks because this is social media. This is YouTube, right? Somebody did. Now, do you want to know who that somebody was? So this ancestor of mine, we are talking 14th century, by the way. This is family lore. I don't know how true this is. This is family lore. But somebody saw this. But my ancestor from that time in a part that's basically northern England, southeastern Wales, this person, my ancestor, she was a brewer. She brewed beer, which was a career that many women had at that time. And I don't remember if she was a widower or if she inherited the land. I don't know all the details. And I don't know how historically accurate this is. Again, this was just in my great aunt, Georgia. She had created a long series of family dynasty and family records. And she had included this story about somebody that was apparently our ancestor. And what we found out about her, what we did find out about her, not me, I didn't do it, my aunt Georgia, is that she owned a brewery. Or not a brewery, but she was a brewer. She brewed beer and she had land. And the person who accused her, who said that he saw her having schmecks on a broomstick with the devil, was her rival brewer and also her neighbor. And once she was tried as a witch and lost the trial, her land was up for sale. And guess who bought that land? And guess who took over, right? So I'm just saying as an example, this man was able to convince the locals of something that was not true for his own purposes. And we can look at easier examples than that one. I've got witchcraft on the mind and I've got history on the mind always. But like, so for example, you know, we used to believe that if you have a headache, a good idea is to drill a hole in your head and release blood from your brain to cure the headache. Thank God for Tylenol. And before you go and say, yeah, well, yeah, but the pressure, yeah, but I'm going to tell you, I think there are many other ways to relieve the pressure in your head before you get to drilling a hole in your skull. Just saying. Or for example, in Greek times, ancient Greece, there were philosophers who believed that there were different humors in the body, right? And that these humors, if they came out of balance, that was what caused disease because they didn't know about germs. They didn't have microscopes. They couldn't do germ theory, right? So I'm just saying, there's all kinds of things that humans believed fervently in their hearts and souls. And there's all kinds of things that we believe fervently in our hearts and souls today, not just on a grand scale as I'm talking about, but on a small scale. And I'm sure all of us have things that we fervently believed at one point in our life. And then we realize, oh yeah, no, right? Like the main boyfriend I had before my husband, I really wanted to convince myself that he was the one because I had an intense connection to this man. But looking back on it now, I'm like, oh my God, thank God he's not the one. Sweetheart of a man, a broken man when we met, good looking, talented, smart, all of the things I like, not stable, not available for the truth of who I was as a person. I was too much for him. He told me so. He said, Erin, the truth is you're just a little too much for me. And that's true. At the time, I was horribly offended. And I was like, I'm not too much. I'm not too much. And I started making myself small to keep him. But we both knew. He knew. So I don't know. I mean, I wasn't really thinking, oh, once he's back in, then I'll be my grandiose diva self again. A self I love. Is it for every man out there? No. But for the right man, I am right, right? For the right, there's more than just my husband who might be right for me, but that's a whole other story. It was true. So thank God he wasn't the one because I don't think I could bear a life staying small just to keep the love of somebody who was intimidated by my energy, right? That couldn't work. That's not sustainable. So I did believe he was the one. And maybe there is a parallel universe in which he is, in which I'm a slightly different variation on the theme of Erin. But that ain't this life, right? So, how do we know? How do we know the difference? I want to break this down into what I think are basically four different voices that we are going to talk about, because every voice is important. Every voice brings information. Every voice needs to be heard. Because if you don't hear one of your voices because you're denying it, it will rise up and make itself be known somehow, right? In some kind of other way, some kind of other energy. But if we can learn to listen to the four different voices and delineate and respect them, but then choose from a place of wisdom, having taken wise counsel with each of the four voices, then we can proceed with our lives in a way that is just going to be more loving for ourselves, more true to ourselves, and probably more sustainable and more able to succeed in the future, more able to be expressed in the future, right? Your dreams in life. Because ultimately, all of this boils down to what we want is love. We're all just reaching out for love, right? Even when we think it's other things, we can still kind of boil everything down to love of some kind. I love that meme that came out recently. Somebody interviewed Ethan Hawke, and they asked him about unrequited love, and he said, oh, it's always great to be in unrequited love. The person who's in love always wins, because that's the person experiencing love. And I want to tell you that if you are in unrequited love with somebody else, or if you're in love with somebody else and they don't return that, or you're in love with somebody you can't be with for a variety of reasons, maybe they are no longer on this planet, maybe there are all kinds of reasons, there's nothing wrong with the being in love part, right? There isn't. There might be something wrong with insisting that this is the only love relationship for you forever in a way that it's making you miserable. But the love is in your heart. That love comes from you. You're the creator of that love. And if you can create that love because it was triggered by that person, you can create that love in other scenarios too. So number one, the first voice, the beautiful, wonderful, often quiet voice, often a quiet knowing, is intuition. Intuition, very important. Now, true intuition, for me, sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it is loud, and when it is loud, it is usually a feeling that I have not been necessarily, a voice I have maybe not been hearing for a while, and now it's getting loud, and I usually feel it in the feelings in my body. This can be so simple. Did I ever tell you the Bette Midler story? I don't know if you have listened to my show before. Years and years ago, one of my best friends, a boy named Josh, well, now he's a man, but back then, boy named Josh. Josh loved Bette Midler, and I love Bette Midler too. And Josh's boyfriend at the time had bought us tickets for all three of us to go see Bette Midler at the Target Center in Minneapolis. And this is a long, long time ago now, I think 20 years ago. And then Josh and his boyfriend broke up, but his boyfriend called me and said, hey, don't worry about the fact that we broke up. They were on again, off again. We're still going to all go see Bette Midler. I'm really excited to take you guys to Bette Midler, so don't worry about it. I did have to sell the tickets to pay a bill, but I'm going to buy the tickets again as soon as I have money. Don't tell Josh. And I thought, okay. But I thought, okay, I'm not going to say a word. So we're all three supposed to meet for dinner at a restaurant near the Target Center in Minneapolis. And only Josh and I show up. His boyfriend doesn't show up. Sean. May he rest in peace. Sean is no longer with us. And Sean's not there. And Josh is like, I have a bad feeling about this. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to tell you something Sean told me not to tell you. And I told him the story. And he was like, there's no tickets. And I said, well, hold on. Let's just call him. So we called him, got on the cell phone, called Sean. Sean didn't answer Josh. Sean answered my call. And I said, hey, it's Aaron. He was like, oh, hey, yeah, I got the tickets, but I'm at home. I'm not coming. And I said, oh, okay. He's like, you're going to have to come get them. They're in Plymouth. And we were like, but the show starts in like 20 minutes and we're just paying our bill and walking over. And Plymouth is like a good 40 minutes from here. It's a suburb of Minneapolis. And he said, yeah, phone clicks off. I call back, no answer. Oh, the phone must have died. And Josh says, well, I guess there's no tickets. Let's just go hang out and do something. And I said, wait, let's just walk over and see. So we walk over, we walk up to Will Call, we try my last name, Josh's last name, Sean's last name, no tickets. And Josh is like, let's just go. And I'm like, wait a minute. Let's just wait a second. I don't know why, you guys. I don't think it was even Aaron's voice. It was just that something told me to stay. So we were standing out in the front entrance area. The ding, 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 ding had all gone off. Everyone was entering the arena. And we were just the last few stragglers left. We were just standing by the front doors, and this man approached us, and he said, "Are you guys waiting for your tickets?" And Josh said, "Yeah, my boyfriend is supposed to bring them, but we don't think he's coming." And he said, "Well, you know what? I don't think my date is showing up either. Why don't you take my tickets?" We said, "Really?" And we both hugged him, and he looked very surprised to be hugged. I mean, this was Minnesota, you know. You don't hug a Minnesota man. A nice middle-aged man who's being stood up by a date, and he's giving you his tickets. We hugged him, and he said, okay. We said, thank you, sir, thank you. And he leaves, and we run in, and they are front row in the balcony in the first floor above. Amazing seats. And afterwards, we go to the hotel across the street to have a drink, and all of her backup singers and band are there, and Bette herself, it was the hotel they were all staying at, Bette herself came down. It was the last night of their tour, and she came down to congratulate her backup singers and her band and say thank you and have a drink to toast them. And so Josh and I got to meet her very briefly and toast everyone, and it was like amazing. Now, how did I know? I didn't know. Something in my heart, something in my solar plexus said, "Aaron, stick around." So, intuition. Generally, when it first comes, it is that calm, steady assuredness, right? Sometimes it's inconvenient. Oh, I hate when it's inconvenient. You know, like just a knowing that, you know, the printer is broken. Just a knowing that, or a knowing about my car, but I have to go to work anyway. I've learned the hard way. If I get a feeling about my car, I pay attention. One time, back when I did massage therapy and I used to go to people's homes, I was at a client's home, and I had had a feeling in my car as I was driving over to her house. So I gave her the massage, she paid me, and I was supposed to go see a dance performance after that. She said, "Would you like to stay for dinner?" And I remembered this feeling I had about my car. And I said, "You know what, I would." And I skipped my friend's dance performance and I stayed and had dinner with my client and her family. And then I went and I was going to go deposit the money that she'd given me into the bank. And it was around 9 at night at this point. But I was very broke back in those olden days. And so I needed to put that money in right away. So I drove to the drive-through, the ATM at the Wells Fargo on Laurel Canyon and Ventura Boulevard. Very, very busy neighborhood. People walking by in front of me. But guess what? I put in my ATM card, I put in the PIN, I reached over to grab the money to put it in the bank, and tap, tap, tap. There was a masked person with a gun on this side and a masked person with a gun on this side, and I was getting mugged in my car. So I have learned, that is one of many, if I get a feeling about my car, I'm going to avoid that car. I am going to avoid that car because I've had a feeling about the car, and every time it is proven correct. So, mama don't play no more. Auntie Erin does not play. Mm-mm. But these are extreme examples, right? A lot of times, it's just a question of what if that keeps coming back again and again and again, right? It wants you to do something. Your intuition wants you to make that phone call or fix something or right? Whereas anxiety is loud. Anxiety will just try to steamroll you, but intuition, the more you breathe into it, the more you just suddenly find yourself acting, right? Okay, voice two is anxiety. Now, anxiety masquerades itself as intuition often, okay? Intuition doesn't need to convince you. It does not require evidence, and often there is no evidence ahead of time. The evidence is after the fact. The Bette Midler tickets came after the fact. I got mugged in the car after the fact, right? Okay? Also, intuition rarely panics. until you're at that point, right, where you're like, oh, I'm getting mugged. Well, now I'm panicked, although I didn't panic, actually. The world went very quiet. Time stopped moving quickly. It started moving very slow. My brain started computing every possible outcome of the scenario so that I was prepared to do whatever I needed to do to get out of that alive. And obviously I did. I just lost $100. Those dumb robbers were so unlucky to have chosen me. I had no money in the ATM. -$20, something like that. They were like, this is all you have? They were so mad. I shouldn't laugh. They had guns. But, you know, fooled you. Back to voice two, anxiety, right? Anxiety has signatures of spiraling, right? It's like overwhelming, and you just, your brain starts running away with you, and you start thinking of every disaster and catastrophe possible, and it needs you to do something right now, right? It needs you, instead of intuition, which is like, just stay, just listen, okay, go get a new printer, okay, call your mother, whatever that is, right? Where it's like, very calm. Anxiety is like, oh, I've got to call my mom now. It's drama, right? It starts feeling like drama. Now, there are people in this world who don't recognize drama. I am a recovered drama addict, and I am dead serious when I say I believe there should be a Drama Queen Anonymous 12-step group, because there are many people who are drama queens and kings, and they don't know. They think it is the world happening to them instead of they are creating the drama and they are responding with drama, thereby adding to the drama. I did not know when I was young. I really didn't. I didn't realize it until I worked with this one spiritual teacher who showed me. And it was very painful to witness. But remember the one woman show about my love life? It's the same vibe, right? Oh, common denominator. Oh, in fact, most of my love life problems were caused because I was a drama queen. And I wanted the drama. And why did I want the drama? Because the drama felt like life, and I was avoiding my actual feelings with the drama, right? Well, guess what about anxiety? Oh no, I'm about to ruin it for you. I know when you're having a panic attack and you feel like you're having a heart attack and you're going to the hospital because you think you're having a heart attack, but it's a panic attack, you don't know the difference. But the more you get in touch, the more self-aware you become, the more you get in touch with your own self, your body, your intuition, the more you begin to realize the difference between anxiety as a habit, as a pattern, and actual thinking, actual life, actual choices. Now, anxiety is not so easy to just get over, I'm telling you. I mean, I had to go to India twice and stay in ashrams and get sick with liver disease while I was there and get sent to a healing ashram where nobody spoke English, and there was a three-legged horse and a laughing swami. You know, I went through kind of an extreme process to quit being a drama queen. And I'm so grateful that I did that. During COVID, in the very early days, I was having a lot of anxiety. And I decided for the first time in my life, I was gonna try weed. I mean, I had tried weed, but I never liked it. Well, I was trying very, very, very low dose THC to deal with my anxiety, and I started getting nauseated, and I started throwing up, and my joints hurt. And at first I thought, oh God, I'm pregnant. That's the last thing I need right now. And then I found out, in fact, no, I'm just one of those people who responds really weirdly to weed. The things that it's supposed to cure, it does to me. Okay, can't use that. Then I found out about a supplement called L-theanine, and I started taking it in large amounts. And for some reason that allowed me not to avoid the anxiety, but to see it coming. It was amazing. It was like, I could see the anxiety coming. I could see it at the gate. And then I decided not to engage, at least in my part in things. I started breathing deeply, doing body scan meditations, grounding myself, doing EFT tapping. And pretty soon the anxiety just stopped coming around. Now, I'm not saying I never have anxiety, but I am not ruled by anxiety any more than I am ruled by drama. Those two things don't rule me anymore where once they did. So I'm telling you, maybe we'll do an episode on this. How do we deal with our anxiety? right? But a question for you to understand the difference between intuition and anxiety. When I sit with this feeling, when I sit still, does this feeling get louder and crazier and try to keep me from sitting still? Or does it settle with me? And then a deeper sense of calm and understanding comes over me. I think you know which one is anxiety, the one that gets louder and crazier and wants you to stop sitting. Stop sitting, stop sitting, stop sitting, stop sitting, stop sitting. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Right. Voice three, longing. Oh, longing and I are such longtime friends, man. Frenemies sometimes, but often friends. We have a, I can't call it a love-hate relationship, but we have a long and complicated romance. Longing is so beautiful. It creates novels and operas and songs and paintings and poems. And it's not always longing for romance. It could be longing to know God, longing for children. I once had a friend say, well, the reason to have children is to make the desire for having children go away. She meant that in a very deep way, like, because of course, if you've ever been had that deep desire to give birth, to have children, it is beyond reason. It's hormonal, right? It is built into our systems. And it is so powerful. But longing, it can also be very dangerous, right? It can lead us to do foolish things, even to harm ourselves. Now, longing actually often feels like recognition, right? It can make us feel like, oh, this person is the one. They see me. I know this person would see me if they spent any time with me. We have this thing, we have this connection. Now, sometimes, like I said, that might be true. And sometimes, you know, what we're feeling is a chemical process that is very intoxicating, right? It is a biochemical hormonal process designed by our biology to get us to procreate or, right? I mean, these hormones are so powerful. Dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, right? So there's this other thing, which is often we feel we have a connection to somebody, but what is actually happening is our pain bodies are being attracted. There is somebody who is mirroring a wound of ours back to us. So I'm a connector, right? As a human person, I just, all my life I've been a connector. I can tune into somebody pretty quickly. I like listening deeply. It's all habit at this point. I really do love to listen deeply. We talked about that last week. So a lot of times people will think I am their, the one for them. I've had that happen quite a bit. Or that I am somebody that I'm not. And I mean, literally, like they'll say, Daphne, we went to high school together. Don't you remember? I mean, I think I know where I went to high school. I think I know my name is not Daphne, right? But people have argued with me about that. And I think it's just that I connect. So that I end up, whether on purpose or on accident, usually on accident, mirroring a pain back to them. And so that means something to them. They feel seen. It can feel like coming home, even when that's not what's really happening. So what do we do with this longing? Well, we ask ourselves, am I really drawn to who this person actually is? What I know of who this person actually is, right? Are we really suited to each other? Or is this about who I hope they might become? What I hope they might become to me? What if they would just pick me, that would mean to me about myself, right? I mean, that's like a celebrity crush, right? Like, oh, well, if whoever, I don't know. Who, like I just mentioned Ethan Hawke. If Ethan Hawke could pick me, well, then I'm validated as a human person or something. Okay, voice four, projection. Okay, this is a very dangerous one, and this happens all the time. And projection is when we take, you know, what we want, what we feel, what we're fearing, and we put it onto that other person. And we will do it to other people all day long. Right? Especially celebrities, but somebody we're in love with, somebody that we want to get to know. It just, what happens is we feel like we know this other person very deeply, but what we're doing is we're actually knowing ourselves very well and then attributing those qualities to that other person. Right? So we might not even recognize that it is ourselves. but it is ourselves. We all do this. This is a human trait. This is not a character flaw. None of these are character flaws. All of these are human traits, okay? But projection, when we believe it is a spiritual connection, a soulmate, right? Well, this is where it can become dangerous and we can start convincing ourselves of something. And the more psychically sensitive you are, I want to say the more important it is to ask, is this coming from them or is this coming from me? Right? Because if you are psychically sensitive, I don't know about you all, but a lot of times I'll be having a feeling and I'll be like, well, where the heck is this feeling coming from? And it's the feeling in the room. Or it's the feeling of somebody I'm very close to. But then I will also, so I will receive projection as well as I will project onto. We all do it. Like I said, the more sensitive you are, the more important it is to ask, okay, well, what is this? So I wanted to talk today about twin flames and soulmates, but I think we should save that for another time because that is a long conversation that really deserves its own episode. So you all let me know, would you like me to talk about twin flames and soulmates? As I get my setup going here, and I'm able to interact with you all in the comments and things like that, we'll like I said, the last Tuesday this month, we're going to be doing live readings and such. But I would definitely love for you to let me know. Would you like me to talk about twin flames and soulmates? Let me know. Because I think that's just going to be too long for us today. So instead, what I want to do is I want to remind you that it's wonderful to be alive, and it's wonderful to be human, and it's wonderful to be in love. And if you are in love with somebody who loves you back, that's awesome. And it can be annoying, and life will go on, and things will start to happen. If you are in love with somebody who doesn't love you back, that's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes that can be very stimulating. And if you use that energy for creativity, for inspiration, I would highly suggest you use that energy for healing, for getting to know yourself. You can ask yourself, okay, well, if I am in love with somebody who doesn't love me back, what am I to do with this? What can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? How can I be with this? Because I'm telling you, it is really, truly wonderful to be alive. It is. It is. And being in love is a part of that. And if you've never been in love, I encourage you to begin to look for all of the little chips and blocks in the way of that. And look for the things that you do love in your life. And don't pressure yourself to fall in love with somebody else. Fall in love with yourself, with your life, with what's in front of you, with something that you want to do. It's a good start, okay? So, here are the questions that I want to leave you with. One, if you are in love with somebody, or an imagined somebody. Oh, I was deeply in love with imagined somebody most of my life. Okay, number one, when you imagine being with this person in everyday life, not in the fantasy version, but like everyday life, right? Like this morning, I get up, my husband's already up because he reads, gets up at like 4:30 a.m. every morning and he's already up. So as soon as I get up, he's already got a million questions he wants to pepper me with. Thank God I'm a energized person and I don't need a cup of coffee first. Otherwise he would be missing a head many years ago. And because I would have bitten it off. And so, you know, then we have to have our morning meeting and we blah, 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 before I've even brushed my teeth, right? This is just how it always is. It's cool. But I'm just saying, like, you know, life will go on. So when you imagine yourself in a relationship in an everyday life, but not in the fantasy version, not in the version where they're proposing in front of the Eiffel Tower, do you feel expanded or do you feel contracted? Right? Do you start feeling all the limitations? Just a question. Number two, is this feeling pointing you towards personal growth, towards the life that you want? Or does this feeling feel like a loop, feel like a pattern? Do you feel stuck? Do you feel trapped? Number three, if a close friend of yours were to describe this exact situation to you about themselves, what would you tell them? These are the questions, this last one in particular, that might be a little bit difficult to answer honestly, but I'm telling you, they are very important and they will help you, okay? So now, before we close out, I want to tell you a little bit about our modern oracle tool. And I was thinking about all of the different tools that we have at hand. And I was thinking that I know a lot of you come to me for tarot card readings, and I've done those for, I don't want to say how long. I was about to say how long. I'll just say since I was 16. So don't do the math. Anyway, and I was thinking, you know, I know Mark is doing an awesome series right now on, you know, different aspects of astrology. And I was thinking about one of my favorite tarot cards. Yes, the Star, but no, not that one this month. I was thinking about a symbol in tarot that Mark was recently talking about on his astrology show, and that is the moon. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the moon itself, not so much because that's a whole other episode, right, for charting our lives and living and working with the moon, but the moon as a tarot card symbol. Because here we are, we're in the time of Gemini, but soon we'll be entering the time of Cancer, connected to the tarot card, the moon, right? And it goes along with what we're talking about here with fear and fantasy and longing and illusion and romance and unrequited love, both for good and for ill, right? So the moon is about illusion. When we're talking about the tarot, right, as a tarot card, it is a card of illusion, but not always illusion, also the unconscious, right? Of things that may not be as they initially appear to be, okay? So if you think about it, under the light of the moon, or the dark of the moon, is often where we engage in our most secret, deepest, innermost thoughts. Sometimes these things make us ashamed, whether or not they should. Sometimes these are just the most private, intimate aspects of ourselves. That is one of the reasons why when we're talking about love and romance, it just feels so high stakes, right? So, for example, if the moon card appears in a reading, and in particular we're talking about love, this is a moment for us to just take a pause and listen very deeply. Because this is a card asking us, are we seeing things clearly? Are we seeing things clearly? Are we seeing what we want to see? Are we seeing what we fear? How do we see what is? Now, I'm not saying that the moon is a wrong path. It is not. It says, listen deeply, tread carefully, pay attention. Don't make permanent decisions on temporary feelings, right? I could tell you about the time I almost got married at the Star Trek Wedding Chapel in Las Vegas. I did not, okay? But the moon also, it's beautiful. It's mysterious. And it rules the realm of psychic sensitivity, of dreams, right? Of the unconscious. So, for example, if you've been having vivid dreams lately about somebody. Now, for example, last night, I have no idea why I dreamed about Johnny Depp. I really don't know why. I mean, I haven't thought about him in a while. I don't know. He showed up in my dreams. When I was little, I did love this movie called Don Juan DeMarco, so could be that. Because that's like childhood stuff for me. And that is a movie about like love and fantasy and getting real in relationships and what is real in love and what is not real. So I guess it makes perfect sense that I would be talking about love and fear and intuition and longing and desire and then dream about Johnny Depp. Oh, the moon says there's information here, but maybe you need to just wait for the light of the sun before you act on it, right? So if you find yourself dreaming about somebody lately, or you're like overwhelmed by feelings you can't shake, give me a call, because I've got some tools for that. I have definitely eternally sunshined of the spotless minded people on in my life, and I'm better for it. So we are all here just navigating these murky waters of love, right? And the beautiful, this is me, this is the ocean coming in and out, ruled by the moon. Ruled by the moon. So this week's practice, I think, is going to be the three column clarity check. Okay, so this is a good practice for you whenever you need clarity on anything, whether that is a love relationship or a decision at work, or whatever you need clarity on. Okay, you're going to write down three columns. I don't care if it's a journal or your notes on your phone or in the, on a napkin, whatever works for you. I want you to think about a situation that's been weighing on you, and you're going to make these three columns. And column one is what I know for sure. You're going to write down everything you know for sure, not everything you hope. Be very thorough about this. Be honest, right? You don't know if this person is the one. That's a hope, okay? Just what I know for sure. I see this guy at the gym. He's got a beard. He does leg days on Mondays and Thursdays, whatever. Okay, so not what you hope, but what are the actual observable facts? What has this person said? What have they done? Right? What's happened? Number two, column two. What I am afraid of. Okay, name your fears. Be honest. Name your fears. Are you afraid of abandonment? Are you lonely and you're tired of being lonely? Are you afraid of being wrong about this person after you've built a lot of energy? I mean, obviously, I'm saying it's about a love relationship, but it could be about anything, right? So, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of losing something? Get it out of your head. Get it onto the piece of paper or the napkin, whatever it is you're using. Column three, what I actually want, okay? Not what you want from them, but like what you want for your life. Right? So, like if it is about love, it's like, well, what I want in my life is a great relationship, or what I want is to get married. What I want is to get married to a great partner that I'm going to ride it out with for the rest of my life. Or, what I want is a flame, whatever you want. Nope, this is not for anybody but you. What do you want? Okay. So, the magic is that usually after I've done this exercise, then I usually find that column one, when it's about something I don't have a lot of clarity on, is actually kind of short. And what you realize if you do this exercise is that we often really don't know a whole lot when we're living in a non-clarity about a situation. So our mind is filling in with story. That's what it does. Our mind is filling in with fantasy, made-up stuff, right? Think about ChatGPT. If you ask it a question, it doesn't know. It will make up an answer, right? It will, because it has to answer. That's what your mind is like. So this exercise is going to help you see reality, fantasy, middle ground, and that might help you just make some great choices for yourself, okay? So I just wanted to leave you with this last thought, which is this. Clarity is not the absence of feeling. It is what is left when you stop letting fear and you stop letting fantasy do the talking, okay? You deserve love that doesn't require crazy obstacle courses to get it. I mean, some people are into that, but you deserve real love. And you can trust your gut. You can. And take the time to listen to which of the voices is speaking to you, right? All right, I will see you next week. If you want to come find me from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. today, my prices will be lower at 1toListen.com/Erin. That's Erin with an E. Otherwise, I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.